Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, October 23rd, 2020. Coming up this hour,
the final presidential debate strikes a more civilized tone as the candidates spar over foreign influence.
On Capitol Hill, skepticism grows over a stimulus package.
And the FDA approves the first virus therapy for COVID-19.
A cybersecurity advisory says Russian hackers are targeting U.S. government agencies. Plus, former New Jersey Governor Christie urges people to wear masks. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Heartbreaking loss for the Giants. They blew a lead in Philadelphia. Dodgers and Rays, game three of the World Series tonight.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good Friday morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And futures are higher this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're up 4 points. Dow futures up 59. NASDAQ futures are little changed. The DAX in Germany is up 0.6%. CAC in Paris up 1%. And the FTSE 100 up 1.1%. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 0.85%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.4% or 17 cents at $40.47 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.5%. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the final debate between President Trump and Joe Biden. It was a more civilized affair this time, with the candidates sparring over foreign meddling in the election.
Russia has been involved. China has been involved to some degree. And now we learn that Iran is involved. They will pay a price if I'm elected. They're interfering with American sovereignty.
Biden also charged President Trump with being soft on Russia. The president fired back.
While he was selling pillows and sheets, I sold tank busters to Ukraine. There has been nobody tougher on Russia than Donald Trump.
The president also falsely accused Biden of accepting money from Russia.
Joe, you were vice president when some of this was happening, and it should have never happened. And I think you owe an explanation to the American people.
The former vice president denied the charge, pointing to the president's foreign business interests.
I have not taken a penny from any foreign source ever in my life. We learned that this president paid 50 times the tax in China, has a secret bank account with China, does business in China, and in fact is talking about me taking money. I've not taken a single penny from any country whatsoever.
Comments tied to race made news in the first debate. This time around, the moderator gave President Trump a chance to clarify his views.
I am the least racist person. I can't even see the audience because it's so dark, but I don't care who's in the audience. I'm the least racist person in this room.
At the same time, the president called what he's seen from the Black Lives Matter movement, quote, a terrible thing. When it comes to race, Joe Biden had the last word.
Here's one of the most racist presidents we've had in modern history. He pours fuel on every single racist fire, every single one.
The candidates mostly complied with the new format, making for a more organized and relatively cordial debate this time around.
Overall, the contest was seen as a tie, and that's according to Republican pollster Frank Luntz, who said the president needed to do more to pull ahead.
The reason why Trump needed a knockout blow tonight, and why I think that in the end he's going to be the one who lost, is because he didn't get that. He didn't change the race. And if we go and vote based on where things stand right now, Joe Biden's going to be elected president. Trump needed to change that tonight, and I don't think he succeeded.
More coverage and analysis on last night's debate coming up throughout the hour right here on Bloomberg Daybreak.
First, it looks like odds for a stimulus deal before the election are fading. For weeks, Senate Republicans have been skeptical about passing a measure. Now it looks like House Democrats are starting to share that view. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Republicans never did like the size of the $2 trillion stimulus package, and now some House Democrats oppose the idea of a vote on any stimulus measure before the election, saying there's no point in returning to the Capitol for a vote if the Senate isn't ready to act. Pelosi says they're near an agreement on how to allocate money for testing and tracing to safely reopen schools and the economy, but still have not settled main sticking points, aid to state and local governments, school funding, and a liability shield for employers. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thank you. We have a new development this morning in the fight against the pandemic. Gilead's remdesivir has become the first drug granted approval by the FDA. And we get more from Bloomberg healthcare reporter Michelle Cortez.
They will continue to track the medicine to make sure that there isn't anything that's unexpectedly negative happening. But it means that we're out of the woods of having to prove that it's beneficial.
Remdesivir was one of the drugs given to President Trump when he was diagnosed with the virus, and Gilead shares are up almost 7% this morning.
Meantime, the virus surge continues in the Midwest, with Illinois, Ohio, and Utah all reporting daily infection records. Chicago is imposing a business curfew starting tonight. Mayor Lori Lightfoot says restrictions will begin at 10 p.m.
You think about where we were just 2 weeks ago, or even at the beginning of October, and where we are now, it's like we're back in the spring.
Only essential businesses will operate after 10. Liquor sales will be cut off at 9. The curfew is expected to last at least 2 weeks.
Let's turn to news on Wall Street now, with word that Wells Fargo is exploring the sale of its asset management unit. Bloomberg News has learned the business could fetch more than $3 billion. We're told Wells Fargo has been discussing a possible deal with asset managers and private equity firms since last month.
On the earnings front, shares of Intel are down more than 8% in early trading following the company's latest results. Here with details is Ed Ludlow from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
The chipmaker's major source of pain was its data center business, usually a key profit maker for the company. After leading the industry for decades, Intel has fallen years behind in new technologies like 7-nanometer chips. Investors were clearly left disappointed by a lack of news from Intel executives on when it's going to catch up. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Ludlow, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And thank you. Shares of Mattel rose 12% in extended trading. Third quarter results shattered expectations as consumers snapped up Barbie dolls and Hot Wheels during the pandemic.
In Europe, shares of Barclays are up more than 6.5%. The London-based bank had another strong quarter thanks to pandemic-driven volatility. Barclays also posted lower-than-expected impairments from the virus. Futures a bit mixed this morning. S&P futures up 4 points. Dow futures up 58. NASDAQ futures little change to lower. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. At 5:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Michael Barr for a check of what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Movie theaters are allowed to reopen today in New York State. However, in the city, cinemas will remain closed. Theaters will be allowed to only have 25% capacity. Each screen will have a maximum of 50 people. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says while the state's positivity rate remains low at 1.2%, there were more than 1,600 cases Thursday. The governor also commented about the White House calling for a vaccine by Election Day.
Forget the day you're going to have the vaccine and stand up in the Rose Garden holding up the vial. That day is almost meaningless. How does that vial get reproduced 300 million times in this country, and then get administered by all the states?
In New Jersey, the count of daily coronavirus cases continues to rise. It was almost 1,200 yesterday. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is calling on citizens to wear face masks during the pandemic. Christie, who contracted the virus after working at the White House, spoke yesterday in Ohio.
I want everybody out there who's listening to understand that this is one of the most unpredictable, random, and brutal viruses you'll ever see.
Christie also wrote in the Wall Street Journal, a mask is not a partisan or cultural symbol and is not a sign of weakness. Police in New York are still looking for a man who threw a 73-year-old grandmother onto the subway tracks in Brooklyn earlier this week. She survived just in the nick of time before a train arrived. Grandson Henry Cheng was also attacked Monday when he asked a man to put out a cigarette at the subway station in Brooklyn. He says the man assaulted him and his grandfather. Cheng says when his grandmother tried to intervene, the man threw her on the tracks.
I realize now that this is not the right time to say things to people that you don't know how people react.
No arrests have been made. According to a cybersecurity advisory issued by U.S. agencies, Russia has been targeting U.S. government agencies since at least September and may be planning more severe attacks in the days leading up to Election Day and even afterward. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bird and Accountants and Advisor Sports Update. Happy Friday, John Stadshauer.
All right, Nathan, the Giants league-leading 42nd loss over the last four seasons. Maybe the toughest to take. In Philadelphia, they had an 11-point lead with 5 minutes to go. They were on the verge of being no worse than a game out of first place. But the Eagles went 78 yards in four plays and then 71 yards in six plays.
Wentz lines them up again, but they're at the 18. Fulgham to the near side. Can he be the hero? Wentz is back. He's looking, still looking. He starts to go. He is firing. Touchdown! Boston Scott!
What a catch.
Corner at the goal line and went in.
What a catch. What a throw. What a catch.
UIP the call as the Eagles did it again to Big Blue. 22-21. The Giants' eighth loss in a row to Philly. Winless there since 2013. There were bright spots. Daniel Jones threw two touchdown passes. He also had an 80-yard run that was somehow not a touchdown as Jones tripped and fell, but the Giants scored later. The defense, except for allowing an early TD and the two late ones, played very well, but their record drops to 1-6. World Series Game 3 tonight, Arlington, Texas, Dodgers and Rays tied at one. Good pitching matchup. Walker Buehler has made four postseason starts for L.A. His ERA is under 2, and New Jersey native Charlie Morton has made 3 for Tampa Bay. He's 3-0, ERA under 1. When will the next NHL season begin? The goal is still January 1st, but the league announced there'll be no New Year's Day outdoor game and no All-Star game since they don't know yet whether fans will be part of next season. The NBA announced due to COVID its draft next month will be held in the studio and no players will be invited. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Well, we'd like to invite you to tune in later this morning for an interview with White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow. That's coming up at 9 a.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio and Television. Ahead of that, futures pointing higher on this Friday morning. S&P futures up 5 points. Dow futures ahead by 66. NASDAQ futures a gain of 6 points now. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are jumping with positive earnings and solid German manufacturing data putting them on track for the first increase this week. And U.S. stock index futures, they're jumping as well, erasing earlier losses. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures now up about 8 points. Dow futures up 92. NASDAQ futures up about 11. The DAX in Germany is up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 0.85%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.3% or 13 cents at $40.52 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.5% or $8.70 at $19.13.30 an ounce. The euro 1.1841 against the dollar. British pound 1.3091 and the yen 104.63. We are watching for earnings from companies including American Express today and Intel, watching those shares down more than 8% after a surprise drop in data center sales and a tepid forecast added to concern the company is losing its lead in computer chips. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. There were clashes, but it was calmer compared to the first debate. President Donald Trump and Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden traded charges of secretly taking money from foreign interests in their final debate of the campaign in Nashville. Trump and Biden sparred over their economic policies, the coronavirus pandemic, immigration, and racism. The candidates were also asked what would they do for communities living near industry. Biden wanted to limit and regulate the pollutants. Trump challenged him.
Would you close down the oil industry?
By the way, I would transition from the oil industry, yes.
Oh,
I will
transition.
It is a big statement.
Today, President Trump will travel to Florida. This weekend, former President Barack Obama will also travel to the battleground state. California is bracing for the most powerful gusts of the 2020 fire season, raising the threat of more blazes and blackouts. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
There are 11 days until the election. We are following all the latest developments right up to Election Day live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. Let's get more on last night's debate now. Greg Valliere is with us, Chief U.S. Policy Strategist at AGF Investments. And Greg, I'll admit, after the first debate, it felt kind of silly to ask who won. After last night's debate, I think it's okay to ask who won.
Well, good morning, Nathan. I thought Trump won. I didn't think it was a particularly strong night for Biden. He had trouble sometimes getting the words out. And maybe most importantly, he had a gaffe. He basically gave the Republicans an opening by calling for phasing out of oil. That's not a popular position in Texas, Oklahoma, and maybe in Pennsylvania as well.
And that was certainly a statement that the president seized on pretty much in those words at the end of the debate, asking whether voters in Texas and Pennsylvania and places like that will remember Joe Biden's statement about eventually transitioning away from oil. Was it enough of a knockout blow, though? I remember the last time we spoke, you said the president needed a knockout blow to change the direction of this race. Was it that?
I don't think so. I think so many people have made up their minds. Maybe 94 or 95% of Americans have decided. As we know, an astonishing number have already voted. So, no, I don't think it was sufficient to change the outcome of the election.
What could have been sufficient? Were there any missed opportunities by either candidate?
Well, I think they spent too much time on Hunter Biden. This story is so opaque and confusing to most Americans. People don't understand it. I think that is not a relevant issue for people who worry about putting food on the table, people who worry about the economy. Hunter Biden is not that big a deal for most Americans.
And when you talk about putting food on the table, that sort of echoes a lot of the message that Joe Biden was trying to put forward in terms of the handling of the coronavirus. And we saw some pretty sharp contrast between both candidates in terms of how they've reacted to it. President Trump saying we need to reopen things now, get the economy moving. Joe Biden making the case that we need to do it safely. Which message do you think resonates with voters?
I think that Trump's greatest albatross is his handling of the virus, not explaining it clearly, still putting thousands of people at jeopardy in these big rallies where you don't see a lot of masks worn. I think if Trump loses and he still is trailing, I think it'll be because of his handling of the virus.
So do you think that the president still has a chance to make up some ground? Was this debate the last chance for him to do that, do you think?
Yeah, I think he'll make up a little ground. Right now, the polls show nationwide Biden's lead is around 7 points. It might get down to 5. It wouldn't shock me. The more important focus, obviously, is on 3 or 4 big states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, maybe even Minnesota. It looks like in the upper Midwest that there's been a shift in momentum toward Biden.
And there's also been a shift, obviously, in the upper Midwest and the South in terms of the surge in coronavirus cases as well. How could that potentially affect the race, not just in terms of the candidate's response to it, but actual voter turnout?
Yeah, it could. I mean, the turnout so far has been just remarkable, and I think it'll be pretty strong on November 3rd. And I think that the Trump supporters would turn out in a hurricane to vote for him. I mean, that is an advantage he has with voter enthusiasm. But, you know, even though I said earlier that I thought that Biden didn't have a great night, he didn't really change the narrative. I still think there's enough enthusiasm for him and against Trump to give Biden the presidency.
So what are you going to be looking for in the next now 11 days here to try to change the direction of the race potentially? Or is it just set in stone right now?
It maybe isn't set in stone. There might be still some movable voters. But I think now we need to see the post-debate spin. Will this oil story really resonate? It could in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is still fairly close. Biden talking about phasing out oil, it could hurt him quite a bit. You know, otherwise, I think the economy is still going to be a big deal. We get a GDP number on the 29th of October from the Commerce Department. It'll be a strong number, and that's something Trump can brag about.
Great. Thank you for this, Greg. Always great having you on. Greg Valliere, Chief U.S. Policy Strategist at AGF Investments, on this morning after the debate. We are seeing futures start to rise a bit more now on this Friday morning. S&P futures up 9 points. Dow futures ahead by 102. NASDAQ futures a gain of 15 points. Stay with us for more post-debate analysis. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Dense fog advisory till 10 a.m. It'll give way to clouds and highs in the upper 60s today. Partly sunny to start the weekend off tomorrow, upper 60s. Going to be quite a bit cooler on Sunday, upper 50s. Right now, foggy and 64 degrees.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by BNY Mellon's Pershing. Learn why the world's most sophisticated advisory firms and broker-dealers rely on Pershing to help them improve profitability, create efficiency, attract talent, and manage risk at Pershing.com.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The final debate between President Trump and Joe Biden was a more civilized affair. The candidates sparred over foreign influence in U.S. politics after news that Iran and Russia are working to disrupt the election.
They will pay a price if I'm elected. They're interfering with American sovereignty. That's what's going on right now. They're interfering with American sovereignty. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think the president said anything to Putin about it.
President Trump fired back, falsely accusing Biden of accepting money from Russia.
They were paying you a lot of money, and they probably still are. But now, with what came out today, it's even worse. All of the emails, the horrible emails of the kind of money that you were raking in, you and your family.
Biden denied the allegations, which are tied to unverified emails, and instead attacked the president's ties to China.
Has a secret bank account with China, does business in China, and in fact is talking about me taking money. I have not taken a single penny from any country whatsoever.
The president went on to defend his foreign policy, touting tough lines on China and Russia while explaining his Chinese account as one of many tied to his business.
I closed it before I even ran for president, let alone became president. Big difference.
And we will have more coverage and analysis of last night's debate coming up throughout the morning right here on Bloomberg Radio.
But first, it looks like odds for a stimulus deal before the election are fading. Resistance from Senate Republicans is growing, and now sources tell us some House Democrats tell Nancy Pelosi they don't want to vote on legislation before the election either, if the Senate won't do the same.
Meantime, the virus surge continues in the Midwest, with Illinois, Ohio, and Utah all reporting daily infection records. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot is imposing a business curfew starting tonight.
All non-essential businesses will be closed to the public from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. All liquor sales will be closed as of 9 p.m. across the city.
And now we have a new development in the fight against the pandemic. The FDA has approved Gilead's antiviral therapy, remdesivir. It's the first drug to obtain formal clearance for treating the coronavirus, and shares of Gilead are up about 6% in early trading. S&P futures are up 10 points this morning. Dow futures up 108, and NASDAQ futures are up about 18. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr has more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. There were sparks, but nothing like the chaotic first debate. President Donald Trump and Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden traded charges. The president defended his administration's handling of COVID-19, talking about his own battle with the illness, and said that the country needed to be open for business or the nation will die.
These are businesses that are dying, Joe. You can't do that to people. You just can't. Take a look at New York and what's happened to my wonderful city for so many years. I loved it. It was vibrant. It's dying. Everyone's leaving New York.
Joe Biden.
Take a look at what New York has done in terms of turning the curve down in terms of the number of people dying.
More than 47 million Americans have already voted in the election, now just 11 days away. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is calling on citizens to wear face masks during the pandemic. Christie, who contracted the virus after working at the White House, spoke yesterday in Ohio. Christie shared how he let his guard down and ended up with a life-threatening experience.
I did that for 4 days out of 7 months that we've been going through this pandemic. And 3 days later, I began to feel what I call the freight train.
Christie spent 6 days in the ICU and considers himself lucky to be here. He also wrote in the Wall Street Journal, a mask is not a partisan or cultural symbol and is not a sign of weakness. Movie theaters are allowed to reopen today in New York State. However, in the city, cinemas will remain closed. Theaters will be allowed to only have 25% capacity. Each screen will have a maximum of 50 people. Jeffrey Epstein's ex-girlfriend denies introducing Britain's Prince Andrew to any underage sex partners in a defense and combative deposition made public yesterday. Over 2 days of questioning in 2016, Ghislaine Maxwell answered questions from lawyers as she labeled the prince's accuser as an awful fantasist. The transcripts were made for a 2015 defamation lawsuit. A judge rejected arguments that releasing the interviews would jeopardize a fair criminal trial for Maxwell next July. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Update with John Stashower.
All right, Nathan, things were looking good for the Giants last night in Philadelphia.
Jones takes the snap. He looks right. He throws right. End zone. Touchdown, Giants. Sterling Shepard. And the Giants cap off a 97-yard drive. And now lead it 20-10 with the extra point pending. 6:17 to go. Second touchdown pass of the game for Jones.
Payne had the call. Daniel Jones also had an 80-yard run. He tripped and fell to shy of the end zone, but the Giants still scored. After falling behind earlier, the Giants to that point had outscored the Eagles 21-3. Giants fans with visions of first place in the anemic NFC East, but they have seen this movie before. The Eagles with two Carson Wentz touchdown passes in the last 5 minutes. Sure enough, pulled it out, 22-21. Big Blue has now lost to Philly 8 straight times. Newest NFL team with a COVID problem, the Las Vegas Raiders. 5 players on the COVID list, which means they are high risk. The Raiders were to play Tampa Bay Sunday night. Since the game may not be played, they moved it to the afternoon, moved Arizona and Seattle to primetime. Dodgers and Rays play Game 3 of the World Series tonight in Texas. Series tied at 1. Walker Buehler for L.A., Charlie Morton for Tampa Bay. The National League this season used a designated hitter for the first time. Not expected to use it next season, but maybe in 2022 after a new labor deal is agreed to. Gold Glove finalists were announced. Not a surprise that Yankee third baseman Gio Urshela was named, but so was Clint Frazier, who in previous years had been considered a defensive liability in the outfield. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Thanks, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Howard Hughes Corporation is proposing a $1.4 billion development in Manhattan's South Street Seaport District. The real estate developer wants to turn a parking lot at 250 Water Street into two 470-foot towers with a mix of affordable rentals, offices, and condo units. Well, in the world's big financial centers, from New York to Toronto to London, rents for city apartments are plunging. Manhattan apartments, for example, are the cheapest they've been since 2013. But in Westchester County, purchase prices for single-family homes have surged 16% from a year ago. Connecticut's projected budget gap is down to $1.3 billion. That's a nearly 40% decline from the prior month's estimate as income and sales tax revenue exceeded estimates. Revenue was revised higher by $454 million. At your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potaskin on KNX in Los Angeles. We're talking about Southern California-based Mattel topping quarterly forecasts as people snapped up Barbie dolls and Hot Wheels toys.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Wells Fargo is said to be exploring the sale of its asset management unit.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the worst results so far from the UK's test and trace system.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for KCBS in San Francisco, I'm reporting that Gap has outlined
need an overhaul that includes more of a focus on casual wear and shifting away from malls.
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on Cogo in San Diego, I'm talking about a California appeals court ruling that says Uber and Lyft drivers are employees.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. We wrap up a busy week of third quarter earnings reports as American Express opens its books this morning. Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky has a preview.
Card spending likely continued to recover during the quarter, according to Bloomberg Intelligence. Although corporate travel remains dormant, consumer travel spending continues its steady recovery. Spending has not migrated to rival cards as Amex has added reward categories to its most popular travel cards geared toward the impact of COVID-19, such as food delivery and streaming services. Analysts surveyed by Bloomberg are forecasting a third quarter profit of $1.34 per share on revenue of about $8.6 billion. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Larry, thank you. Well, first it was Google. Now Bloomberg News has learned U.S. regulators are close to a final decision on whether to bring an antitrust lawsuit against Facebook. The case would accuse the social network of using its dominance to harm competition. Staff at the Federal Trade Commission support bringing a case. And Fitch Ratings is warning that default is a real possibility for WeWork. Fitch downgraded the troubled co-working company from CCC+ to CCC. That indicates substantial credit risk. WeWork tried and failed to go public last year. The spread of the coronavirus made things worse. People are opting to work at home rather than in WeWork's communal offices. Futures moving higher. S&P futures up 9 points now. Dow futures up 98. NASDAQ futures up 14 points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit burdenllp.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are jumping this morning, along with European shares with positive earnings and solid German manufacturing data, putting European stocks on track for the first increase this week. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 7 points. Dow futures up 76. NASDAQ futures up 6. The DAX in Germany is up 0.75%. The 10-year Treasury up 1/32. Yield 0.85%. The yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.33% or 15 cents at $40.79 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $7.30 at $19.11.90 an ounce. The euro 1.1846 against the dollar, British pound 1.3084, and the yen 104.62. And American Express is among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, if the first debate was a food fight, last night was more of a sit-down dinner with liver and onions. President Donald Trump and Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden traded charges of secretly taking money from foreign interests. Biden declared he had never accepted a foreign payment in their final debate of the campaign in Nashville. Biden also says that Trump has never publicly released his tax returns. Trump and Biden sparred over their economic policies, the coronavirus pandemic, immigration, and racism. President Trump was asked to explain statements he has made about the Black Lives Matter movement.
I didn't say I'm Abraham Lincoln. I said not since Abraham Lincoln has anybody done what I've done for the black community. Now, you have done nothing other than the crime bill, which put...
Oh, God.
Joe Biden.
Abraham Lincoln here is one of the most racist presidents we've had in modern history. He pours fuel on every single racist fire.
Thursday night football, the Giants lost to the Eagles. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
There are 11 days until the election, and we are just past the final debate of this 2020 election cycle. We have all the developments covered for you live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. And this morning after the debate, we're joined by Brown University political science chair Wendy Schiller. A lot more substance, obviously, than the first debate. Professor, what stood out to you?
Well, I think President Trump did much, much better in the sense of presenting himself and defending his record and going on the offensive about Joe Biden, sort of treating Joe Biden almost like an incumbent, going after the Obama-Biden administration. I think that Trump was actually strong in the first debate and the second debate on energy policy, fossil fuel, fracking. You know, these are key swing states, particularly Pennsylvania, the border of Ohio, thinking about the jobs associated with that and the symbolism associated with those jobs. So I think the president scored some points against Biden, but he did nothing to deflect or, you know, dissuade people who are concerned about his handling of the coronavirus, his position on racism, supporting white supremacy, even some of the language he used at the end when he was talking about women, AOC, the Green New Deal, kind of a little bit disparaging. So I just think that he did very well to shore up his own base and his supporters. I'm just not sure he made the inroads, particularly with suburban women, women more generally, than he needs at the moment from polling to catch up.
What about former Vice President Biden? Did he do enough to solidify his position that if you believe the polls, he's on his way to victory in 11 days?
Well, I mean, I think he did no major harm. I think he missed a few opportunities with the president. You know, the president was hammering him on, oh, well, why didn't you do this when you had 8 years? And he could have said, well, why didn't you repeal and replace Obamacare? You had 3 years. You haven't done it yet. Like, there are things he could have done, I think, to highlight particularly Obamacare over and over again. You know, the way that Trump hammered him, particularly on fracking, he should have been hammering him more on things like terminating Obamacare. I mean, there are more than 10 million people get their health insurance from Obamacare, either through exchanges or, you know, expansion of Medicaid. So when you think about that, that's a lot of voters. And in some ways, I just think there were a couple of missed opportunities that Biden did not take full advantage of.
You mentioned that the president sort of tried to take the outsider role in this race. Dig a little bit more into that, because it is kind of interesting strategy there as an incumbent president to paint your opponent as someone who has been in Washington for many decades.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, you're such a politician. And I was thinking, wow, you're like president of the United States. You're elected. You know, you have, whether you like it or not, become an elected official and a politician. But he's really sort of says, listen, I was the, you know, repudiation of Obama. My record in office has been to undo a lot of what Obama did. And he figures with his base and diehard Republicans who tend to be extraordinarily loyal at the polls and get out to vote, that this is the ticket. If there's any Republican who's wavering on Trump, he was reminding him last night, listen, I'm the one who saved you from the Obama Democrats. It's a little bit risky given that President Obama's on the campaign trail in key swing states. And, you know, it remains still fairly popular with the American public. In particular, Obama is trying to really rally African-American voters, those who have not voted already. So whether Trump, you know, ate into that, I just don't know. We aren't going to know, because the expectation is a lot of African-American voters may vote in person over the next couple, you know, weeks, either, well, actually a week, in person or on Election Day.
And it was interesting to hear the president last night sort of frame the idea that to use his words, he's the least racist person in the room based on economic opportunities, as opposed to the message that Joe Biden has been putting out there, that character and decency are on the ballot. Which side do you think has more resonance as we get closer to the election?
You know, I think that, Nathan, that's a great point. It really depends on how people hear the language. I know it sounds sort of complicated, but it's really the receptiveness to the messaging. You know, Trump's like, look, a job is the most important thing. And, you know, it is true that Latino and African-American unemployment rate fell a great deal under Trump. So he can claim, you know, credit for that. On the other hand, the way he speaks about the African-American community, he didn't talk that much about the Latino community. It's just like they, the black community, they, them. I met with them as if they're outsiders, as if they're the other. And I think that's the way he speaks about almost anybody who's, frankly, not like him. So it depends how closely you were listening to it, to whether that message was going to come through as a positive or a negative of President Trump.
Only about 30 seconds left here. Do you see any further opportunities for either candidate to grab hold of a swing vote in this election?
Yeah, I think if the president, you know, stays on message, I think he can maybe claw back some of the people who've been wavering. But if he continues to hammer Biden personally on character issues or go after his son in a way that's mocking or mean because his son's had some problems, I think that's going to still turn off women. And he's running, you know, more than 20 points behind with women in the suburbs. I think that remains a challenge for President Trump.
Brown University political science chair Wendy Schiller, thank you, as always. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:54 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. It is brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Today, we're looking at some of the cases Supreme Court justices are choosing to hear later this term. One of those cases will decide whether police officers can chase you into your home without a warrant if you've only committed a misdemeanor. For more on the case, June Grasso speaks to Bloomberg Law editor Jordan Rubin.
So, Jordan, tell us about this case involving hot pursuit for a misdemeanor.
So in this case, a man named Arthur Lang was driving in Sonoma, California, and an officer followed him home into his driveway and eventually into his garage. After that, Lang was convicted of DUI. Lang's argument is that the officer wasn't allowed to pursue him into his home without a warrant because Lang was only suspected of having committed a misdemeanor. And so that raises the issue whether law enforcement can enter a home without a warrant in hot pursuit of someone suspected of committing a misdemeanor. The court has said that officers can do so when investigating felonies, but not minor traffic violations. And so this case presents something in the middle, misdemeanor pursuit.
Is there any generally accepted rule across the country about hot pursuit in misdemeanors?
So there's not. It's courts across the country have interpreted that differently. Some apply a categorical rule saying that law enforcement is allowed to conduct these hot pursuits in misdemeanor cases just like they are in felonies, and some other courts around the country hold differently. And so the question in front of the court now is whether this categorical rule allowing these hot pursuits in misdemeanor cases is okay in the same way that the court has said it's okay for felonies.
So now this involves privacy interests. And in the past, the Supreme Court has been very protective of privacy interests in the home, especially against intrusion by law enforcement.
That's right. And so we'll see to what extent that's going to be true in this context, whether they're going to apply the rules they've upheld in the felony context to the misdemeanor context, or whether people will essentially have more protections in their home when suspected of committing misdemeanors than they do of committing felonies, at least when it comes to this hot pursuit doctrine.
And that's Bloomberg Law editor Jordan Rubin speaking with June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures up 6 points this morning. Dow futures up 75 and Nasdaq futures up almost 6. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. Our top stories are straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.